Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. Ads for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
So welcome back. Hey, the top 25 went from hunters to prey this week. Many of the games were close at halftime, but you know the reality of it is you got to score more points than the other team. Some of the ranked teams didn't even make it to the tape, but we'll dive into that a little bit later. What's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back to the College Football Roundtable, or if you could prefer, you can call it Ring Knocker Radio. We got a special Ring Knocker on. We're going to introduce him here in just a second. I'm Rob, your host in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Dano Ikebesa is in the woods right now, so he has a spotty internet connection, so he didn't want to roll the dice and try and interrupt the show. We got Trigger Joe calling from the home of the Big House, and joining us today is former Army team captain Sandon McCoy. Welcome to the show. So, what games did you guys watch this weekend? Sandon, we'll start with you, move over to Joe, and then I've got some notes in here from Dan as well.
The only game I watched this weekend was Army football. That's the only game that if I have a big schedule, I need to fit one game in. It's Army football.
Yeah, that's fair. Joe, what about you? We know what you watched. Did you watch anything else after the Michigan game?
You know, for a second, I thought I was watching a stray dog get beat for no reason. Then I realized I was watching Michigan. And no, man, you said holy cow Tennessee. I said holy cow Quinn Ewers, man. What a performance he put on. And Texas looked like the best the team to beat, unless you're an Ohio State guy. But they haven't quite been tested with that kind of talent yet.
Yeah,
that's true. Texas came in and handled it in the Big House and beat a team that hadn't been beaten 2 years handily.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was painful for me, but awesome performance by Texas. They were solid.
Yeah. Okay. So quick rundown notes from Dano in Maine. He said Army and Navy both look good. Coach Ken got his revenge on the Zoomies. He said, holy shit, Tennessee, Rocky Top looks great. And Michigan State pulled out of what he thought was going to be a death spiral. And I will say that because we threw some shade on Aiden Childs last week, and he actually played a very good game, respectable performance, this week. So, again, it's college football. That's why we play the games, because if we go in there and you look at the money line or what people are betting on, you never know how it's going to end up. For me, of course, I watched a lot of football, as always. I'm going to sound like a homer when I say this, but the Black Knights looked amazing this week. I think they're 2-0. They're creeping up. I think the only other team that has more rushing yards than them is Central Florida. And again, it's Golden Knights, Black Knights, so Knights are on top, but we prefer the Black Knights to be in the driver's seat. The Buckeyes look good, man. They've got some weapons. You know, I watched that game. You know, normally they play with their food when they're against a team that they should blow out, but, like, they turned it on, and they've got a serious 1-2 punch in their backfield, and they have a freshman wide receiver that probably will not make it past his sophomore year, because he's going to leave and go into the NFL. Like, there's no doubt. Jaden Smith, I believe his name is. And, Colorado did not pan out the way that I thought it was going to. But, like, for argument's sake, I still think that Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter are probably the most electrifying QB wide receiver duo in college. I mean, you can argue the rest of the team, but those two dudes, they are gamers, and they show up to play every time.
Yeah, Rob, on that note, though, I mean, Colorado lost to Nebraska, right?
They got to be pretty good. Yeah.
But maybe Nebraska's really good this year.
Well, that's been a lot of the discussion going into the second year, because Matt Rhule has always been able to, you know, he did it at Temple, he did it at Baylor, now he's doing it at Nebraska. You know, does he have a trick up his sleeve? Maybe
their quarterback grew up right down the road from me, and they really believe in that kid. His brother played center for the Lions, Dominic Raiola. So he's been a big talk in Michigan for a while. And I think he's one of those kids that didn't get recruited by the teams that he wanted to. Not that they're saying anything bad about Nebraska, but he didn't get any in-state love. And he's playing with a chip on his shoulder. And I don't know. Colorado didn't play a whole lot of defense last year. So we'll see what that kid's made of. But he's 2-0, and he's looked pretty good doing it.
Yeah, he's solid. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that there's no QB controversy in Nebraska. And again, like I said, Shedeur Sanders and Like, they're going to get – Shedeur and Travis are going to get 3 touchdowns a game probably the entire season. It's what's the defense going to do and what everybody else in the supporting cast is going to be able to bring to the table. And that's unfortunate that they didn't really, you know, perform the way that they should have. But I also think that, like, there's a coaching battle going on there that, like, we don't see. You know, I think, like, the position-wise, position for position, you know, yes, Nebraska is probably the more talented team, but the other part of it is that nobody is talking about is everybody's talking about how good the quarterback is, but nobody's talking about how well the defense played. You know, I'm not willing to say that there are, you know, the black shirts of the early 90s, but, you know, you get a shutout on a team that has a pretty powerful offense like Colorado. It's, you know, they had them shut down at halftime. So I think there's something to be said about the performance of the defense. Anyway, we're going to play some Bills real quick. Hey, we have a sponsor here at Ask for Football, and it is Jocelyn Bradley. So if you're PCSing to the Fort Bragg area, we have the realtor for you. Jocelyn is a veteran who spent her Army career in logistics. There she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream homes when you're in the market, and she proves to provide exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn also has an extended network of veteran realtors who can support you in moving anywhere else in the country. So if you're in the market for a home, Jocelyn should be your first call. She's decided to support us this year, and the best thing that you can do is check her out, see if she can help you find your dream home. Anyway, we are not going to belabor that any longer, but we really appreciate Jocelyn taking care of us this year at Ask for Football, being our sponsor. Let's talk Service Academy standing. So, we already alluded to it. Army won 24-7 against FAU. We will break that showdown in much further and greater detail tomorrow on the Army Football Show. The question is, you know, will the Army season break projections? Because I can tell you, like, the moment after the game ended, like, every prognosticator that was, you know, throwing shade on Army before the season started kind of flipped the script and started talking about how well the team played. And, like, you know, the only other comment that I have for the Army game is the fact that they went into like 100-degree temperatures wearing all black. Like, yeah, that's a boss move, you know, for sure. I think anybody that's a football fan is like, oh, you guys are going to wear white in humidity? Roger that. We got you. And then you put it on them. That's insult to injury already. Anyway, we're going to move on. Revenge of Ken Niumatalodo is actually the Air Force game. They rushed for 3.1 yards a carry. They were 7 for 20 passing for 54 yards, and they threw 2 picks. Air Force couldn't move the ball. Congrats to Coach Ken for another Service Academy victory. I will cheer on Coach Ken as long as he's beating Air Force. And I think the boo birds are starting to come out. Like, the socials are lighting up Coach Calhoun, and everybody's like, hey, this guy needs to go. He's not performing the way that he is. And, like, I think they're on a five loss streak right now, right? And that started with the Army game last year, and they've dropped every game since then. So Air Force has got their work cut out for them for the rest of the season, and we'll see where they go. You got something? All right, moving on to Navy. Navy looked good against the not-so-good Temple team. The mids jumped on them early and didn't look back. The defense opened the scoring with an early safety, and it was all downhill from there. They finished with 5.8 yards of carry. The mids rushed for 297 yards. They threw some screen passes, but this game was mostly a running clinic with their new offense. They look so far so good. Both Army and Navy have a bye this week. I think that matchup at the end of the year is starting to look good. You know, it's early in the football season. We get it. But if both Army and Navy can put together respectable seasons this year, like, how awesome would that be to see a, you know, 10-10, 10-1 Army team, 10-1 Navy team going into the Army Navy game, which is non-conference, by the way. So they could actually play 2 weeks in a row if they're both in the driver's seat as far as the conference championship is concerned. So that's an interesting bit of news. Again, we're only a week two. We'll see what happens. For the FCS academies, you know, Coast Guard took on the University of New England. The Coasties needed overtime to put them away. They won 30-24. Coast Guard takes on Anna Maria College next week on the 14th at 12. The Merchants Marines beat Western Connecticut, and they took a page out of Army's book. So they had 282 yards rushing and 5 rushing touchdowns. Merchants Marines take on Gallaudet in D.C. on Saturday as well. Around the American, no conference matchups in week three. I watched the Bama-USF game, and, like, it was close at halftime, and then Bama woke up and remembered that they were Bama. Yeah. You know, Bama's going to Bama, so that's essentially what happened. But ECU and North Texas are also undefeated. If we can keep up, if all these teams can keep up with their out-of-conference schedules, I think it's going to be impressive going into the stretch for the American Conference, just because you have four undefeated teams right now, which is, you know, I won't say unprecedented, but it's been a while since that's happened in the American. I'm starting to feel, you know, I think this is going to be a collision course. There's going to be some undefeated teams late in the season in the American, and those are going to make for much better matchups. I think the American game of the week, though, is going to be Memphis at FSU. And the reason why I say that is because FSU is 0-2. Look, man, DJ does not look good. I think there's anybody that watches college football knows that there's a problem in the quarterback position at Florida State. And then the other question of it is now, you know, everybody that's hindsight is going, hey, maybe the committee made the right choice by not putting them in the playoff. But is it a coaching thing, or is it legitimately because, like, they're just not getting it done? Memphis is a 3.5-point dog on FSU, and we'll see what happens. What are you guys' thoughts on FSU? Did you watch any of their games yet, or is it just too painful to watch DJU, like, throw it all away?
I've watched enough to know that it's not just DJ. The defense against Georgia Tech was getting ran on pretty consistently, and I don't know. It's a mess. I can tell you that there's not a whole lot that I wouldn't tweak right now. It looks like they lost some talent that they had a hard time replacing. And, you know, if you swing and miss in the transfer portal on a couple of big commits and they don't produce, that hurts nowadays because everyone's getting guys out of the transfer portal. And if you don't get the right ones, it's almost like wasting a draft pick in the NFL. It has the same kind of effect. It's more impactful. So I don't know. Florida State just doesn't look like themselves.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on down there, but, nobody cares now about FSU. Like, they're also Rams, and we're only two games into the season, which is just remarkable.
Yeah.
So before we dive too deep and the rest of and get to the topic, which is, you know, the transfer portal, we still got a couple other stops along the way. Joe, who's the Blue Falcon of the week, though? Who do you got?
Oh, man, I'm going to Monday morning quarterback this thing so bad. It's Kirk Campbell, a.k.a. the guy who was calling the offensive plays for Michigan on Saturday. Colonel Rob, I got to ask you, I think I know what your answer will be, but who do you think is the most explosive and proven talent on Michigan's offense? Who would you pick if you had to pick?
Yeah, it has to be Donovan Edwards because he's the only guy that's really coming back with a lot of in-game experience.
Okay, I agree. And herein lies my problem. His stat line was 8 carries for 41 yards, mostly on first down. So he was knocking off 5 a carry, okay? And one target resulting in a 2-yard reception. The same guy that scored 2 75-yarders back-to-back against Ohio State, scored 2 long touchdowns against Washington in the national title game to seal off a couple of huge victories. And the guy's relegated to 8 carries and 1 target through the air. I don't know if Michigan fans are allowed anywhere near the press conference, but he'd be answering some questions. One of them being, why would you put your trust in an unproven quarterback when you've got a kid like Donovan Edwards in the backfield who you can get the ball any which way you want? He's one of the best receiving backs in the country. He gets in the open, forget about it. He can run between the tackles, and it's Texas.
Yeah.
You put the result of the game into 33 throws from an unproven quarterback when J.J. McCarthy never threw the ball 33 times, and he was undefeated against Ohio State, a national champ, and not to mention a first-round draft pick. How do you argue with that logic? The only proven piece off that offense wasn't used at all on Saturday. Now, am I saying that Michigan would have beat Texas if they would have done that? Not necessarily. But you get another 6-minute drive and a touchdown out of it from running the football, and that score looks a whole lot different. And I'm going a little bit off script on this one, but the fact that he was out-coached to the point where he thought he had to get cute on offense with an unproven quarterback rather than putting it in the hands of the bell cow. Because you might not see another back like Donovan Edwards. And, you know, he ain't going to play Texas again because he's gone after this year. So I'm not really sure what you're doing trying to get cute and throwing gadget plays and push the ball down the field to receivers that you don't really know who your number one even is yet. You know who your number one running back is, and you gave it to him 8 times. Yeah. So because Michigan looked like Mike Tyson with his right hand behind his back on offense, Kirk Campbell, I'm putting you in the sacred order of the Blue Falcon.
Nice. Well played, sir. Right.
Sandy, I'll try to get untriggered and stop telling the homer, but that was rough.
So I'm going to toss it over to Sandy real quick, because as an Army football player, you understand the importance of ball control and running the ball, right? So if you have quality running backs, what do? You know, like that's Army football 101, right? I control the clock. I keep the other guy off the field. I know you got some thoughts on this. So.
Oh, 100%. And when it comes to running the ball versus passing, of course, I'm going to be more favorite in running the ball myself, especially coming from Army. But, I mean, just with Donovan Edwards and his just ability to run the ball. And the thing is like, if we're not completing passes, at least we have that option. But, like, you got to come in the game knowing that I'm going to give the ball to Donovan Edwards at least 15 times. You know what I mean? And every time in the red zone, like, he's going to score. And so that's kind of my mindset when I think of just what's going on here at Michigan.
You know, I will touch one more thing on it, what I think it has something to do with. And I think the set of shoes that Sherrone Moore is filling, it was a lot more comfortable to tweak the offense at halftime and make changes when you've got Jim Harbaugh standing next to you going, yeah, do it, Coach Moore, do it. When your name's on the bottom line and you're the head coach and Harbaugh's not there and you're in a big game against Texas and Quinn Ewers looks like Cam Newton, you know, sometimes you might get a little gun shy on going away from the game plan. And it just looks like they game planned improperly for Texas. They thought they could throw when they should have leaned on the run. I mean, they had another back. They had two other backs that averaged over 4.5 a carry. Like, it didn't even have to be Donovan Edwards. They just didn't run enough. So I think that deviating from that game plan in year one in a big televised game, maybe Sherrone Moore was a little indecisive and didn't, because he's the offensive genius on the team. But being the head coach, he had somebody else calling the plays. Anywho. Yeah, I figured Michigan was going to wear one with the way Texas looked. I thought they were going to have a better puncher's chance. And
I think where I fall on it is simply this, right? If you know that you're going against what happened when Army played Michigan? They controlled the ball, right?
I was at that game.
Ball control matters, you know, and that's the thing is like as college football and pros have evolved, we've gotten away from the running game. Right. Like the NFC is no longer the black and blue division. Right. Like we say that it is, but it's not, you know, like those used to be the teams like, hey, you're going to run in an I formation. You're going to smash mouth and dudes are just going to keep coming downhill until either you break or they score a touchdown. And that mentality is moving further and further away in college football, because, again, like when you look at Michigan last year, Michigan won a lot of games through running the football. And they were controlling the clock, but they also weren't scoring a lot of points. You know, there's a lot of, you know, 35 to 10s or 20, you know, 30 to 24s or whatever, but it was a win. Yeah. But the reason why you were creating those wins is because you were keeping the football away from the opposing team's quarterback. And like, look, they should have ran all four downs against Quinn Ewers, right? Bleed the clock as much as you can so you can keep that guy off the field, because that dude is like, who would have thought he would have reloaded that quickly after Xavier Worthy, you know, going somewhere else? You know, that was one of the things, is like, how is this guy going to, you know, show up and go to another.
And not look like a rookie either. Because Xavier Worthy don't look like a rookie.
Yeah. Like it's pretty.
Like Kyrie the other night.
Yeah. All right. So Joe, take a deep breath and let's run us down the top 10 for this week.
All right. Number one, Georgia, they stay put. Nice tune-up for the Bulldogs. They put it on Tennessee Tech 48-3. Texas deservedly moves up one spot to number two. Absolutely flawless victory over my Michigan Wolverines. Texas might be the best team in the country. They deserve the bump. Ohio State fell one, laid the smaction on Western Michigan. Do you see what I did with that word?
Yeah.
They haven't been tested, and they drop one spot because Texas just played a tougher opponent. Bama, no change there. They whooped up on South Florida in the second half, pulling away 42-16. Ole Miss jumps up a spot. The Rebels move up after pummeling Middle Tennessee State 42-6. Missouri makes a big leap to number six, jumping up three spots after abusing another MAC school as they roughed up Buffalo. Boy, I bet the MAC schools are going to be happy to see conference play start. Yeah. Tennessee made the biggest leap on the list, jumping up to number seven and seven spots. But how about them Volunteers? Biggest leap after embarrassing the Wolfpack in Raleigh 52-10. Look out for the Volunteers. They looked good. Penn State, no change as the Nittany Lions got themselves a good old-fashioned scare at home against Bowling Green. Penn State prevails in the end, 34-27. Oregon dropped two spots after yet another close one at home, pulling away from Boise and winning 37-34. Something fishy about those Ducks. I'm getting cute with the words this time. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, they'll be tested on Saturday when they go into a 2-0 Oregon State. I guarantee it. And then Miami makes a appearance on the list as the Canes jumped up two spots and continue their stellar play as Cam Ward goes off for 300 through the air, four touchdowns, no turnovers against Florida A&M. Canes roll 56-9.
Yeah, we're gonna be talking about Cam Ward later on in the season. I think like he's making his case at least to be one of the best quarterbacks, maybe even Heisman contention. You know, because everybody, who's this Cam Ward kid? You know, like, I guess people in the state of Florida knew who he was, you know, for sure. But this guy's really making a move. And dude, like I said, I will bank on Oregon. I will put $100 down every season that Oregon will lose one game. Like, that's a fact. Like, that's for me, I've been that way. The last time they ran the table, of course, was 1916. And I don't see them doing it this year. The only disappointment is that it's going to come before week 10 against Oregon State. Because I think Oregon State has – like, throw records out the window. It's cliche, yeah, because it's a rivalry game, but definitely within the realm of the possible. So we're already at 10 losses for the top 10 this year, which is almost unheard of. It usually happens in the middle of the season, but it's happening way early. Georgia Tech got you know, Kyle McCord may have found his fit. Like, he wasn't the right fit at Ohio State, but when he showed up at Syracuse, he showed up. So they defeated Georgia Tech 31-24, but – hey, the kid King for Georgia Tech, that guy is a good quarterback. Like, that guy had serious rushing ability. And so it's hard to see them go down like that. So that was a good competitive contest. We already talked about Michigan and Texas. Like, this one we got to park for a while. So what are you guys' thoughts? NIU beating Notre Dame. And I know you don't care, Joe, because you're a Michigan fan. But, like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, should that have even happened?
I said pre-show I was an undersized sprinter. NIU's the only team that actually legitimately recruited me outside of Eastern Michigan. So I always got like a soft spot for them. And it's Notre Dame. So I hope Irish eyes were crying.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm with that too. I mean, that's just insane. I mean, I didn't even watch the game, but I saw the scores. And I had to look at it twice. I'm like, how is that even possible? Like, what's going on with Notre Dame? Like, is it – like, when you say Notre Dame, like, it held some weight. And to get beat by NIU for, like, second week, it's iffy.
They wanted the action, and they got it.
They certainly did. Like, that's one of those games that's just like, that was a check game for sure. But NIU made the most of that $1 million or $800,000. I think it was $800,000 that they got to freaking smack down Notre Dame at their place, man. That's brutal. Again, we talked about Tennessee getting cooking on freaking NC State. Kansas lost to Illinois in a close one. Like, that was a lot closer than I thought. And I like, you know, Kansas. They're a decent team. Thought they were going to do things in the Big 12. Those dreams may not be over, but every loss from here on out probably counts a little bit more just because, you know, there's 12 teams in the playoff, but you got to have a good record to do so. And if there's undefeated teams, the chances of you getting into the playoff are getting slimmer and slimmer, particularly when Power 5 or Power 4 conference teams are losing. You know, so like, hey, if I have a choice between a one-loss Alabama or independent Notre Dame, the SEC team probably is going to get the nod, you know, and we all know that. And that's just kind of the way that this things go in college football.
Can you imagine a team other than Alabama got in that Rose Bowl? Even if Michigan loses, that was one of the best games I saw in a few years.
Yeah. That was a great one. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's just like, like you just never know. And with the 12 teams, it'll be interesting to see. And then, of course, Iowa lost a close one to Iowa State, and Iowa State captured the Cy-Hawk trophy again. My thing about the whole conference realignment right now, what's killing me is that we're having these games that usually are tremendous matchups, and they're always going to be great because, like, you could play Iowa State, you know, 10 times, and it'll probably be a 50-50 split, yep. You know. But it should be a game that happens towards the end of the year. You know, like, rivalry weekend is a thing that should be a thing, and it shouldn't be, like, one or two rivalry games here and there sprinkled throughout the course of everybody's schedule. Really don't like that, but what are you going to do? We'll dive into the topic today, and the topic is – you know, what do we really think about the transfer portal and what position has been affected the most? Like, I got my thoughts. I had somebody, you know, drop some stuff on the socials that made me think about it a little bit more. But, you know, which positions do you think have benefited or which ones have been the most costly? Just what are your thoughts on the most effect in the transfer portal? We'll go Sandin and then Joe, and then I will close this one up.
Yeah, I mean, one, that's a good question, but the transfer portal, it just holds so much. It holds a lot of power, right? Because not only do you have to deal with, like, the position group, but also, like, now NIL deals. And I think when you're a college athlete, especially a football player, it's like, okay, yeah, I like this school, or am I thinking about more playing time? Am I thinking about NFL? Am I thinking about, like, NIL deals? You know. But, I mean, it just depends. I think it just depends on, like, who is going where as far as, like, what position. And, like, let's say if I'm a quarterback, all right, if I'm a quarterback, where would I want to go to get my most NIL deals? And I'm probably going to – if I'm a good quarterback, I'm going to an SEC school, maybe ACC, but definitely, like, a Power 5 school rather than, like, just, I don't know, like, maybe the MAC conference, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Grayson McCall, right? So Grayson McCall was at Coastal Carolina, which is Sun Belt. And then their whole, you know, NIL deal kind of fell apart because they had, like, the Teal Backers, which was the name that they were called. And so those guys went away. And so there's this big void in cash at Coastal Carolina. And so where did Grayson McCall go to? He probably could have gone to Wake Forest. He probably wasn't going to get the same, you know, level of push like Riley Leonard did and go to Notre Dame. So he went to NC State, which is a bigger market. You know, he went from, you know, the Sun Belt to the ACC, which from a perspective wise, like, I can assure you that there are quite a few, you know, Grayson McCall jerseys that left the shelves in NC State when he went over there. So I think there is something to be said about that. Joe, what are your thoughts? I mean, I know that you guys have it. Michigan has done well in the portal, but, like, what position do you think that they've actually benefited the most in that, you know, since it's been active?
Well, if it's Michigan, without question, it's been offensive line. Without question. They've reloaded two starters and plugged them into the offensive line at least 4 years in a row. And these are guys that are getting drafted. So it's like Sandin said, you know, you're falling into the right spot where you're going to be, not only are you going to play and be successful, you're going to be showcased. Mm-hmm. And that's a business decision for a lot of these kids. And the thing that I like is, like, I would call myself an old school fan, but the stigma of, oh, it's a business, not a game anymore. We need to lose that or we're going to lose football. Like, it's changing. The game's changing. And these kids are making business decisions like they're in the NFL at a younger age. And that's not stopping for anybody now. So yeah. A lot of times, I looked at Cam Newton's interview last weekend when he said, when I wanted to transfer from Florida, I couldn't go to an in-state. I couldn't go to an SEC. I couldn't do any. He's like, so how did I bypass all that? I went JUCO. Could you imagine if a kid had to do that nowadays? No. What would be his decision process if they said, oh, yeah, you can't go anywhere around here and you can't go anywhere in conference unless you go to a JUCO and play all your games without being paid and without being on TV? You know, that's why Cam Newton's such a stud, in my opinion, because I lived in Charlotte through his whole career and Carolina. And that dude donated his body to the game, whether they say it or not. He played through a lot of injuries and a lot of hurt, but it's just. I'm getting off topic, but quarterback to me is the most influential position depending on, because it's usually the big time quarterback. Sometimes you have like the guys like McCord that are probably not going to see playing time, go where they're going to get it and are really successful, like Joe Burrow did.
Yeah.
So I would say it's quarterback is the most beneficial to the team if it's a good fit. And then Michigan has really done well with the offensive line transfers.
Yeah. So my initial position was going to be the quarterback as well. You know, it rarely, if ever, you get like it's the oddity, like the Quinshon Judkins coming from an SEC team going to the Big 18, you know, number one rusher in one conference, probably going to be top five, maybe the number one rusher in the conference next season. Like, I don't know if you saw him. He had two like 60 plus yard breakaway runs. And I don't see that not happening for the rest of the season. Again, I think when you look at what's been happening, somebody planted the seed and I kind of thought about it a little bit more. And it's like coaches, right? Coaches are going to have to significantly adapt to the transfer portal because it's no longer about like, hey, how do I just recruit the right kid for my culture? Right. Because right kid for your culture, like service academies have a significant edge on that. Right. So Army, Navy and Air Force, they have a significant edge when it comes to recruiting for the culture, because, you know, typically, you know, Army's not going after like the five-star kid in Florida. I mean, because it's just not who they're going to get. It's not their mentality to serve after, you know, college. They're thinking, hey, I'm going to do my 4 years or 3 years in college and then go to the pros. And so it's a different mentality when looking at players that go to service academies or to smaller schools. But like Trent Dilfer talks about it all the time. And he's one of the big coaches that's always, you know, hot on the NIL stuff. He's like, I don't have $20 million to pay these kids. So what am I supposed to do? I got to recruit for culture. So coaches that focus on that aspect of it is they have an advantage, but they're also significantly disadvantaged as well, because look at what Coach Prime has been able to do, because Prime was always about marketing. Like, he's been marketing himself since, you know, the 90s. And so he understands how to get that access to the Colorado Buffaloes. And they're, you know, they've won, what, 7 games in the last 2 years, but we still tune in to watch.
Yeah.
We still watch, you know what I mean? We still tune in to you know, see what Shador is doing, see what Travis Hunter is doing. And those guys are really good at marketing themselves, but that starts at the coaching position, right? Yeah. You watch.
Retired.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Nick Saban got out of it because he's like, I don't want to sit here and negotiate with a 20-year-old kid about, you know, how much I'm going to pay him next season. Like, do you want to play football for Alabama and potentially win a national championship? Like, that used to be the pitch, right? Yeah. That used to be the pitch for all those guys, is like, I can walk in like Dabo. I can sit down and show you my, you know, my championship rings and be like, hey, do you want to be a part of this? And now most kids are like, yeah, for the right price, you know,
it's so different.
And so it's a change.
Go ahead. Well, no, I was just saying, like Saban said to his wife, it doesn't necessarily matter what we've been pitching for the last how many years we've been here. None of that really matters anymore. It just matters how much we can pay these kids, because they're making business decisions, not program decisions. And Saban basically knew which way the game was going and didn't really want to be a part of it. And that's why he retired. It just was the time for him. He didn't want to adapt. And I mean, I respect that. Like, hey, I want to walk away from football as I know it before I have to relearn it at the end of my career. I respect that.
Yeah, you know, but
at least he was honest about it. Like, hey,
but I also think Coach Saban had a lot of experience too, man, because he went to the pros for a bit, you know, and maybe it's just a little bit different, because like when you look at a pro team's roster, it's a little bit smaller. You know, and now with college football, you're talking 80, 85 kids. And now if they're saying, hey, we're eliminating scholarship positions so you can sign as many people on the team as you got equipment for, you know, those are the things that are kind of like the question marks. And that's why, you know, for sure, we all know that eventually they're going to regulate they've got to regulate NIL, you know, so salary cap is coming next year. And I don't know if we want to call it that, but there's going to be limits to what the university can support. But then they're getting rid of scholarship athletes. And so now, if I can, you know, entice a kid to come play, but people that love the game are going to be the players that are going to be like, yeah, I can go sit at Alabama and probably sell some jerseys and make $200,000 while I'm in, you know, $50K a year while I'm in college. But at the end of the day, I want to play football. And so those guys that are truest, you know, that are still pure for the heart of the game will probably spend a little bit more time, you know, playing at a college that probably doesn't deserve their talent, but they're certainly going to go there because of the opportunity that's presented to them to play football, you know, and not just make money. Like, look at Frank Harris, man. Frank Harris stayed at, like, there's a dude, what was it? He's at Miami now. The dude that has 9 seasons of college football.
Yeah.
So like basically every other year he got hurt in a medical red shirt. Then he had this COVID year. So he had 5 years to start out. And then every other season he got hurt, and he's had like 2 injury free years, which is good. But hey, you know, what's keeping that guy, you know, if he's 19, 27 years old playing college football, you know, what keeps you going? You know, more than likely, it's probably not like the opportunity to go pro. It's probably the NIL money. You know, right, to keep a kid that stays there for that long. And yes, it's a business decision, but I think it also, you know, I've seen some universities like Old Dominion when it first started, like they made that your minor. So like if you are an intercollegiate athlete getting name, image, and likeness money, like your capstone for your, you know, minor in business is how much money you make. You know, hey, force the kids to take advantage of the learning opportunity that's there. Because again, we've all seen Broke on ESPN 30 for 30. And like, I have my whole conspiracy theory, and you know me, Joe, I always talk about following the money. But when you look at the origins of name, image, and likeness, it came from the 2 states that are fiscally the most irresponsible in the United States, California and Illinois. Uh-huh. Right. And when you look at those state budgets, it tells you all that you need to know. Like, hey, look, if I can take all these intercollegiate athletes and make them 10,000-aires, and they got to pay 7 to 10% of their taxes, that's going right into the tax base for all the stupid programs that I want to run. And that's my political soapbox I'll kick out from underneath it. But the reality of it is that's my problem with it on the face. It's not the fact that players are being compensated or we're giving them, you know, more for sacrificing their body in the name of an academic institution. Like, I have no problem with that. I have a problem with somebody making money off of these kids making money.
Right.
And like, that's my big beef. But moving on. So we've got one other commercial and we'll run down the games of the week. If you've listened to this show before, you know that we have a sponsor by the name of Craig Oxane. Craig is a class of 1994 guy. He can lend in all 50 states. He's based out of Chicago. He's one of the most significant VA lenders in the country. He has super competitive rates. Craig is going to give you the best deal that you possibly can. Friends, we know the mortgage process is super confusing, and with rates moving all over the place, it's not time to, you know, use an AI call center or some mindless big box bank or mindless website. This is how the West Point Network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at Ask for Football, and we're introducing you to the person that can help you get a better mortgage and introducing you to the very man that you need to meet. Plus, Craig doesn't charge lenders fees for veterans, so that's a savings of $1,300. Like, if you don't want the $1,300, cut me a check. We'll split it amongst the team here, and we'll appreciate it very much. Anyway, Craig Oxane, VP of Residential Lending. Check him out. The link's on our website, or you can just Google it. You fill out a quick questionnaire, you'll be talking to Craig in like 10 minutes. So moving on to the games of the week. Not a whole lot of high-powered matchups this week, but again, we've got another rivalry. We got 2 rivalries. You got Oklahoma State – or not Oklahoma State. You got Utah and Utah State playing this week, as well as Oregon and Oregon State. You got Thursday night football for those of you that are inclined. You've got Arizona State and Texas State. That's probably the highlight, and that's the one that's going to be on ESPN, unless you have DirecTV.
Only a 2.5-point spread. Texas State is no slouch.
Yeah, Texas State looks good so far this season. ASU, we'll see. They turned it on late last year. This might be the time to catch them, you know, is catch them early, because they usually gain momentum towards the end of the season. Friday the 13th, which is everybody's favorite holiday, you've got UNLV at Kansas kicking at 7 on ESPN. You've got Arizona and Kansas State. That actually will be a good game, and both of those teams are ranked. That kicks at 8 p.m. on Fox. On Saturday, the 14th, you got Arkansas State and Michigan. We'll talk about that one a little bit later because that's one of my picks. You got Oklahoma State at Tulsa. This one may be a sleeper game this week, too, is Alabama at Wisconsin, right? We'll see if old Luke Fickell can put together a package, you know, with running back you. I hate to say it, but, like, Wisconsin always has a 17-star running back field with all the cats that they have, and they usually come at you pretty hard. And we'll see if Bama is ready for that challenge this early in the season. You got LSU at South Carolina, and that's at noon, early afternoon games. Nothing really of interest other than Oregon, Oregon State. That kicks at 3:30, which is surprising for a Pac-12 game or a former Pac-12 game. And Washington State and Washington in Seattle. Again, that's another one that's like, why is this happening so early? That kicks at 3:30 on Peacock for those of you that care or have that streaming service. And then closing out the evening, we got Utah and Utah State. And really, like I said, not a whole lot of high-powered matchups. Ole Miss is taking on Wake Forest. That's in the CEW, and the only reason why I'm calling that one out because that's just a weird place for it to be. UTSA is playing at Texas. That's going to be a beating. You know, as much as we'd like to see UTSA show up, like how many touchdowns is Quinn Ewers going to throw? What's the over-under on touchdown passes? That's probably
Texas is one of my picks this week, to put it that way.
Yeah, I think legitimately, like, there should be an over-under parlay on how many touchdown passes freaking Quinn Ewers gets every week, because that kid's going to throw at least three, 100%. if not more. Yeah. Air Force at Baylor. Hey, let's go Bears. I want to Ofer. Like, if Air Force goes Ofer all season, I will applaud that and, you know, watch Coach Calhoun not shake hands all the way to the bank. You got Georgia and Kentucky. That's going to be a good SEC matchup. That'd probably be better on the basketball court again than it would be on the football field. Georgia's hungry. I think they're coming in to put it on everybody. It's just quiet. They just haven't had a lot of big time games in big time venue time. You know what I mean? Like, they're playing at noon or playing at 3 o'clock and they have unfabulous opponents. You got Colorado and Colorado State. That should be interesting. See if Colorado can bounce back. I'm not sure if Shador is hurt or not. I know he left the game early against Nebraska, so we'll see if he's recovered. I'm a fan of Shador Sanders. Like, I will probably start watching whatever team he gets drafted by. If they're really smart, they'll package him and Travis Hunter as a duo in the NFL draft. Like, that's your touchdown team for whatever team gets them, because, like, those are tremendous athletes. I think Travis Hunter played 1,100 snaps last year, and he missed three games. Like, that's gross. It's gross. There's, like, no other player out there that's like
him. I can't believe, though.
Insanity. And then, you know, Tennessee gets a beat up on Kent State, and that's kicking off at, you know, it's bad when it's on like a team or a conference related network. They're probably planning on a beating. And then one that I'll watch just for the simple of scouting is Rice at Houston. And that's really it, man. So we'll pause for our weekly locks.
Weekly locks.
All right, let's talk about what games we are picking. Sandin, are you watching football this week again, or are you taking a week off since Army has got a bye, or has something piqued your interest?
I'm doing some traveling this weekend. I'll be in Tennessee, so probably taking this weekend off since Army's off as well.
Nice. Sounds like a plan. Joe, what you got?
Yeah, I went 0-4 last week, thanks to Georgia Tech getting beat by the Cuse and Arkansas not covering that 7 in overtime. I thought Arkansas had that thing locked up. I had them plus 7. They ended up going to OT and losing by 8. But I've grown from it. Little early season growing pains. I'm moving forward. So it's time to pick some winners. Pick numero uno. I'm taking the Gamecocks at home as 7-point home dogs to LSU, a team that was winning by 2 points against Nichols in the third quarter at home last week. So Gamecocks are undefeated. Give me South Carolina plus 7 at home. Pick number 2, another home dog and one of your favorites, the spoiler makers of Purdue. I'm taking them plus 11.5 against Notre Dame at home. That game will be within 10 points at worst, in my opinion. And if the Irish have the big upset hangover, those games can get really ugly. Pick 2 is Purdue plus 11.5.
Nice.
And pick 3, can't beat them, join them, or hook them. I'm taking Texas to cover 34.5 over UTSA, who were just embarrassed by Texas State by more than that last week. And Texas just throttled Michigan in the big house. So this could be a 51-3 game. Pick 3, Texas minus 34.5. Nice. And for my final pick, took 2 home dogs already. When I take 3, I'm going with the Beavers of Oregon State, who are plus 16.5 to an Oregon team that didn't score 16.5 all game against Idaho. So, and Oregon State's undefeated. So you argue that with logic if you want to, but I'm not going to try. Upset alert, possibly. Really? Oregon State is my final pick, plus 16 and a half.
So you're taking them for the outright win, or are you just saying to cover?
I'd say Oregon's on upset alert if they play anything like they did against Idaho, and if they let them hang around like they did Boise State, Oregon State doesn't lose a whole lot of games on their home turf.
Yeah, that's fair. So,
you know, they're going to be fired up too.
Yeah. So a note from the crowd, Greg Inesely says LSU always finds a way to lose. I think that's a factual statement. And so I'm going to hit freaking Dano's pick. So Dan went 1-2 last week. He's like, Maryland let him down, or Michigan State just figured out what they were doing after the 1 week scare. But either way, he didn't cover on that one. And then Navy's offense has to come back around, at least against a bad Temple team. I think Navy would score enough by themselves to hit the over, and he was wrong. This week, he's taking ASU and Texas State over 58. I think that's a fair pick because, like you mentioned before, Texas State is good. Super impressive. They
behind themselves last week.
Yeah, Texas State is good. Dano said he was super impressed with them against UTSA. He's like, you think this one will be a roller coaster? He's taking Coastal to cover 17.5 against Temple. If Navy can cover that line, so can Coastal. I think that's fair. And then FIU and FAU under 44. He says he's got FAU bouncing back this week, but their defense is the best part of their team by a lot. So stick with the under 44 on that one. I think that those are reasonable. So again, you got ASU and Texas over 58, Coastal to cover 17.5 at Temple, and FIU and FAU under 44. I went 1-3 overall for the season, and I am 0-2. Like, what's going on with the overs this week? I guess that's everybody. I took a blind cover last week before I looked up the score for App State to cover 16.5 against Clemson. Clemson decided that they were not going to Clemson this week and put it on them. Texas and Michigan, man, the over was 44, and they scored 43 points. You know, I like to pick the over sometimes. That did not work out for me this week. Anyway. This week, I'm taking Memphis to cover 3.5 against Florida State. DJU is terrible. The Noles are struggling with offense. I think the Memphis Tigers are in the driver's seat for sure. I think, 3.5 points, they'll win by at least a field goal or at least cover. But I think this is upset alert for Florida State. I think they're in disarray.
7.5. You're getting 7.5.
Yeah. Oh, it's 7.5.
Yeah, give yourself 7.5 because I was looking up that line. I was like, hang on a second. That's moved. Somehow Florida State is 7.5-point favorites over a 2-0 Memphis team.
Yeah, I don't see that. And Memphis, usually Memphis runs pretty hard early in the season. So I think that's going to be a competitive contest at the very least. And then again, take the over of 47.5 against Michigan and Arkansas State. Sadly, the Red Wolves are going to be on the receiving end of a beatdown. I think they'll score some points just because Michigan's defense does not look as good as it has in previous years. But I don't see
Arkansas State just beat Tulsa outright. They're gonna score a few points.
Yeah,
they'll score a few times.
Yeah, I see this game being like a 35-24, like close to the end of the season last year kind of Michigan.
I don't think Michigan covers.
You don't think Michigan covers? Wow.
No, I don't think they cover 23.
Wow. All right. Well, yeah, we'll see.
I could see them winning that game
35. you got that look on your face. You got something to say. Like, what are your thoughts?
No, I'm not going to say nothing. I agree with you.
They have an offensive problem. So until they figure out their identity on offense, I don't think they're going to run away with a whole lot of games.
Yeah, well, here's the other part. What's the over-under on a two-quarterback system at Michigan round game four?
Listen, I wanted Alex Orji to be the guy so bad, but, you know, I'm 15 minutes from the Big House right now. The inside intel says that he had a really bad spring. And I hate talking bad about a kid that I wanted to be the guy so bad, but they said throwing the ball, they just can't trust him.
Yeah, and I'm like, man. Who needs to throw the ball? Like, clearly, throwing the ball did not work. Like, it didn't help him.
Three, and he's 238 pounds, and he looks like skin painted on muscle. Get him out there and give him a few shorties and let him run a few. Get his confidence up. Like, it can't be any. You just got whooped by Texas.
Yeah,
you know, you got Arkansas State coming in. Give him some time and see what he does.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's going to be some shenanigans going on in the quarterback stuff. So, hey, if you're not a member of the Firsty Club, you need to sign up for the Ask for Football Patreon, because our Picks League has moved over there, and that's the only thing I'm going to talk about, because there's a whole lot of other stuff. But for the team here at the Ring Knocker Radio, I'm Rob, the host and the Angry Colonel. We've got Sandon McCoy, former Army football player. Hey, we're going to get to know him tomorrow. We're going to dive deep into his background and interview him for the Ask for Football Army Football Show. So if you are interested in joining that one, you need to follow us, because he is going to be behind the paywall tomorrow. That's kind of how we do things around here. For calling out of the home of the big house, we've got Trigger Joe. And hey, look, we always like talking about college football, and this is our opportunity to do that with you guys. We run this show open on all the social media platforms to give our audience the opportunity to kind of see what we're doing. If you like what we're talking about and you want to know more, you know, dive behind that paywall. It only costs you a couple bucks, and then you get to interact with us. We do a weekly game week chat. So, like, if you're watching the game, you will be getting feedback from everybody in the Firsty Club, and we're bantering back and forth about what's going on with the games. And quite frankly, I think this is going to be an interesting season. I think the service academies are trending upwards. At least two of them are. I think the big 18 is trending upwards. I think there's going to be some classics towards the middle of the end of the season with those conferences. And of course, the SEC, I think Georgia's the sleeping giant. Kirby's got them fired up, and they are coming after that national championship in the 12-team playoff. But again, for the team here at the College Football Roundtable, I'm Rob, your host. We got Trigger Joe in the home of Big House. And again, a special thank you to our guest, Sandon McCoy, for joining us tonight. More on him tomorrow. And take a look for the As for Football Army Football Show. And we will see you guys next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the As for Football College Football Roundtable. Join the AFF team for more hot takes and college football analysis. You can sign up for our mailing list at asforfootball.com/subscribe. Or you can follow us on all social media platforms at As for Football. And as always, beat Navy.